You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. And here on Sunday night, quite regularly, we welcome into the studio people who can give us advice on various bits and pieces. And Luke Geary from Salvos Legal joins us once again. Luke, good to have you with us.
Thanks, Sean. G'day.
Luke, we're venturing this evening along a path that perhaps is quite fresh in people's mind. We've had the budget in the last week or so, and ticking away beneath all the sound and fury of the budget, governments have legislative agendas that do have an impact on us. And you're bringing to our attention a proposed change that could be to our advantage, but there are one or two pitfalls for people to beware of. And this is in the difficult area of credit, particularly consumer credit. Just give us an outline of what the government's intending to do.
Yeah, certainly, Joel. Look, over the last roughly 12 months, there's been a massive national credit reform package introduced through the Commonwealth Parliament to help make obtaining credit fairer and better structured for the protection of consumers. Obviously, that's a good thing for anyone if it works as it is intended. What I was really concerned about, John, is very recently there's been a bill presented or about to be presented to Parliament, currently being circulated, which deals with the next phase of these amendments. And it deals with amendments to what is commonly referred to as payday loans.
Well, before we get into the details of it, let me quote from a press release put out by Bill Shorten, the minister responsible. People desperate for a small loan to replace a broken household appliance or tide them over until their next pay packet will have more protection from inappropriate lending practices following the release of draft legislation that improves the rules around payday lenders. Now, this draft has been in circulation since August last year, and I gather it's had a fair bit of comment on it. Your concern is that notwithstanding the comment, there are still some bits and pieces which, despite what is said in that press release about this being a good thing for consumers, could be problematic in some areas.
Yeah, look, the draft legislation deals with a number of issues as part of the reform package. One part of it specifically deals with something called small amount credit contracts. Now, in the news, you might have seen there's these payday lending sharks out there who prey on people through their, sometimes I've seen it on some of the topical current affairs practices where they come up with very creative ways to get around the consumer code. I think one in Queensland referred to people essentially buying shares in diamonds. Obviously, they had no idea they were doing that, but that was a business structure set up in Queensland to get around the provisions of the code. But it's for people who want loans of usually between $200 and $2,000 for typical everyday living expenses. So things like, for example, you need to pay the registration for your car, or you need to do repairs on your car, or the purchase of white goods. Sometimes people might use the money to pay the deposit on a rental property or for workplace tools or other clothing items, for example.
And so this is little mum and dad loans, the sort of stuff that people in difficult circumstances may need the money for, stuff that middle class people might have money in the bank for. We've got to buy a new fridge or fix the fridge.
Yeah.
People who are close to the margins are going to have to say, no, I've got to take a loan to buy this. But then they'd be able to pay the loan off within 3 or 4 months usually.
Well, you'd hope so. But the way that some of the notorious payday lenders have been going, the interest rates that they've been charging and the fees that they've been charging have meant that I think in some instances you've had multiples of hundreds of percentages of the actual amount borrowed being what's been requested or demanded to be paid.
So the intent of this legislation is to limit that, to cut out these shonky activities.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the spirit of the legislation. Now, it places two types of caps on the amounts that these licensees, these lenders, can charge people. One is kind of like an interest charge, and it says that over a 12-month period, they're allowed to charge up to 48% of the amount borrowed, and that's a lot of money. But also, they're allowed to charge a 20% establishment fee. Now, if those two figures in isolation are taken into account, plus the principal of the loan, you can see, and these loans typically are over a two-year period, you can see that by the time you borrow until the time you repay, you will have repaid at least 120% over and above the principal you borrowed. Now, that assumes timely payment. It assumes that you haven't had other financial difficulties blowing the period of the loan out.
So at best, they're pretty vicious.
Yeah, certainly. Now, that's if they play by the rules. Now, the part of the sector that deals with payday loans, there's a lot of players in there who don't play by the rules, and they charge very exorbitant check cashing fees or other establishment fees, and they have other unusual creative practices to try to get around the consumer code. The legislation is there now, or the amendments to legislation, to try to rope them all in to make them work under the one system, hopefully, so that we can outlaw these types of practices.
The very fact that they exist and can survive means that there must be a lot of people needing this sort of instrument. That is, there are a lot of people who are sufficiently close to the margins to be desperate enough to go for this sort of financing.
Yeah, I think the figure is that these types of payday lenders write about 500,000 of these types of loans every year. And a figure quoted recently in a newspaper was that the loans annually are worth in the order of $800 million. So a lot of people out there needing this form of finance. Now, this is, of course, for people who typically can't access higher personal loans or credit cards.
Yeah, this is last resort stuff.
Yeah, precisely.
There's a general comment there on the level of the number of people living close to the margins in this country.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. Now, the other thing about the amendments that have been proposed, John, which is of some concern, is the spirit and the intention is certainly to try to get these rogue players out there and make them play within the rules. And one of the effects of the legislation that's been proposed is that the government wants to limit people preying on these individuals who come to the payday lenders for loans. And they want to stop lenders from being able to encourage people to take out multiple loans. So to be able to advertise on their websites or in their shop fronts or to allow people to take out a loan where there's already a loan that hasn't yet been paid off.
$2,000 this week and $2,000 a month later from somebody else.
And you can see how it would spiral. You can see how it would spiral. Now, typically when people get one loan, if they simply have a very unusual but not perhaps unforeseeable change, slight change in their circumstances. For example, say they borrow $2,000 to fix their car. They get the car fixed, and 6 months later, while they're still paying off that loan, there's a different problem with the car. Now, they need their car to get to work, but they don't have money to fix the car. Now, the only resort they'd have typically would be to one of these types of lenders. Now, the law is going to be changed, I think, for a good reason, to stop these lenders from preying on the individual, saying, oh, we'll give you the money, but we're going to charge you this exorbitant rate. The difficulty is, when people have these loans and they need to refinance them, there are other, perhaps, white knights out there in the finance sector who are trying to also eradicate this as a practice. Now, they're unfortunately going to be caught by these types of amendments as well if they pass in the present form.
That is, the amendments in saying that you can't take out any more than one of these at a time,
yes,
effectively prevent the good guys coming in and saying, look, we'll help you straighten out your finances,
exactly,
and get things in order.
Exactly.
So a worst case under this, somebody could have their car and take out a $2,000 loan, then they need another $1,000 in 3 months' time because the gearbox is gone or something like that, and because they've taken out the $2,000 loan, the law will prevent them taking out another $1,000
Correct.
Loan.
Correct, exactly. So they won't be able to refinance individuals who are suffering. So say you take out $2,000 loan and you're paying 48%, and it's, let's be realistic, when these lenders are given permission to charge 48% under the law, it's likely that they're not going to be kind and charge a rate less than the maximum amount payable. So we'd expect they charge 48%. If, however, you get an option from a friend or a colleague and they say, oh, have you heard about this bank or this financial institution? They're allowing people to refinance or people to borrow these types of amounts of money for these types of purposes at just, say, 14%. You're hampered because they're not allowed to advertise that loan to you and they're not allowed to issue that loan to you if you're already a consumer under an existing contract.
So even if this white knight company who offers 14% rather than 48% and are offering to consolidate your loans, that is to bring the old one in plus the new one and charge you only 14%, that is make your financial circumstances better, the perverse effect of these amendments will be to prevent that very activity,
yes,
which the amendments wish to encourage ultimately, from taking place.
Yeah, it forces a person to be committed to the loan they sign up for, notwithstanding they might see down the track a far better offer. And it's in the context, keep in mind, it's in the context that recently the Commonwealth has piloted a program for a collective of banks called a Community Development Financial Institution Pilot Program to give these sorts of loans to try to rebuild into communities. So I guess it's a problem of one part of the lawmakers not talking to the other and realising that there's a difficulty there.
Now, ordinary consumers are not going to be able to sort this out. To get the sort of reforms which would straighten these proposed amendments out requires a level of sophistication and knowledge that a normal community pressure group just wouldn't have. Mm. At what level are professional associations of lawyers and, say, consumer credit agencies and those groups able to talk to government and influence government policy on behalf of the ordinary consumer at this level?
Yeah, I think we all have a responsibility where we have the ability to understand how the law works and the potential impacts that we can foresee for the people who are otherwise unable to stand up or speak for themselves. And certainly lawyers have a fundamental role because they work alongside the lawmakers in both creating and in actioning and enforcing the law. So lawyers, certainly community legal centres, but also banks and other financial institutions
and
who
church,
are players.
Church-based agencies and social welfare agencies who become aware of these things, like Salvos Legal.
Yes, certainly.
So is there any concerted action going to the government saying, look, this is all very well and good, but have you realised the perverse effect of some of this?
Yeah, certainly. Look, a number of submissions have been received, have been certainly sent to the government. Submissions closed only relatively recently, so we're yet to see the response the government might give to those submissions. But there's also a consultation process for the next phase of these types of reforms to the sector taking place over the course of the next month. So there's definitely a discussion happening with government, and we really hope that government will see that not only is it enough to have great intentions, but they also have to consider change that might be happening simultaneously through other sources, such as the sector reforms that the banks and credit unions and other financial institutions are able to gain through their own creative means of lending smaller amounts of money to individuals for good purposes. Now, there's a no-income loan scheme and a low-income loan scheme, and there's these community development financial institutions, and a lot of the big banks as well are engaging in forms of lending to individuals for the purposes of empowering them and investing in them, whether it's for social enterprise or for small business. So there's a lot going on in the sector aside from the government, and it would just be really great if both were able to proceed for the benefit of people at the same time, rather than have provisions perhaps shut out some of that other growth.
You're one of those agencies that acts in both ways. That is, you act as an advocate, you go to government and you say, look, well, this has got to be fixed up and we're advising you, and we've spoken about that. Mm-hmm. The other way is you talk to consumers about this sort of stuff. So notwithstanding that there may be changes afoot, we've talked about that, what sort of is the current advice you give to people who come to you and say, look, I've got a bit of a problem with this. How do I sort this out? I've actually got to take two or three loans, or that's the way I've been running my life for the last 4 or 5 years. At a practical level, what sort of advice do you give to people in these situations?
Sure. Well, I guess seeing a lawyer alone is not going to be the answer. People really need to embrace the opportunities that are available through, for example, Moneycare, the Salvation Army's financial counselling service, or other counselling services that are available.
Yes, most of the big church agencies have similar. Council Wesley have one.
Yeah.
The Anglicans have one.
Precisely. And those services are great. They have trained financial counsellors who can sit down with an individual and line by line work out where the money is coming into a person's bank account and where it's going out, and work out a plan for sustainability rather than not open the envelopes and see the bills and worry and have sleepless nights, which a lot of people, I think, have. A lot of clients that I see have those very experiences where they're too afraid to open the envelope which has got the bill that they know they can't pay, and they're not able to think in a very planned and strategic way how they're able to dig themselves out of that. And there are services available where that can happen. So I think for clients, yes, certainly come to a service like ours where you can get legal advice on whether a loan that might be given to you complies with the National Credit Code, or if there are any other options to deal with your debts. But also I think people need to embrace the opportunities to get advice from a financial counsellor.
avoid loan sharks, that is, these agents that charge you up to 48%.
Mm.
The way to find out about that is that there are actual bodies who will help you consolidate your loans and work that out so you can get a more reasonable interest rate charged and over an extended period.
Yeah, under the National Consumer Credit Code, there are obligations upon lenders to disclose certain things, such as interest, fees, the term of the loan. And if you go to see one of these lenders and they're happy to give you money, just think for a second, well, nobody gives you something for free, right? So what is it that they're going to get out of me? The least you can do, and the least they can do is give you a response to, is ask for the terms and conditions. Now, people get them, but go the next step and read them.
Yeah, but we're terrified of the fine print, because the fine print goes on for 6 or 7 pages and is usually designed to be intensely difficult to read. That is, sentences that will last an entire paragraph with clause upon subclause. And it challenges sometimes even those who read professionally to interpret. I mean, they're deliberately designed.
Yeah, I certainly agree. I agree with that. And what a person can do is bring it into us, for example, at Salvos Legal. We'll happily sit down with you and explain the effect of it, or to any other community legal centre, or I'm sure the Legal Aid Commission would happily as well give advice to people on those sorts of documents and help them to understand not just the likely effects, but the actual effects of these very carefully prepared legal mechanisms. So the lenders, whether it's a small questionable operation or one of the biggest banks, they all invest heavily in lawyers to prepare these documents. So you should as well. And there are plenty of services, which is great news, who'll do it for free for you.
Let's just talk about the time frame here, finally, because we are running out of time ourselves. The proposals for reform of consumer credit are now going through the Parliament. At what point are these supposed to be coming into law, and what time will they take effect in the community?
Well, I guess it really depends on how the debates in Parliament go and to what extent any amendments are necessary. Hopefully there will be a lot of opportunity within Parliament for debate to take place, and hopefully there will be meaningful contributions by people on both sides so that we end up with a bill that's balanced and that protects those who need protection but also allows some flexibility for people who are in the business or in the sector with greater purposes in mind. Now, I believe the bill's due to be debated sometime in around the June Parliament session, and really it depends how long it takes the members of the Houses to settle on a final document. But look, there's certainly an ongoing consultation process. The next round of consultations are due to conclude on the 4th of June. That's the discussion paper that the Treasury has put out, the Commonwealth Treasury. And I'd encourage anyone who's interested in this sort of social impact to go onto the website of the Department of Treasury and look at that document. So all you've got to do is type into the internet browser, amendments, consumer payday lending, and I'm sure you'll come up with the Honourable Bill Shorten MP's press releases. It's press release number 19, and it's got everything you need to know and all the documents you need to really get stuck into these issues, because ultimately they have the capacity to affect every one of us at any point of our lives. The difference between needing a small loan for something just to get by and having the ability to give a loan is often a circumstance or chance.
Payday lending, an issue that is going to confront every one of us from time to time, and perhaps if you want to get ahead of the game, take notice of what Luke's advised, and if you need any help, consult our website, and we'll have a couple of these pointers up on our website on Sunday nights. Luke Geary, thanks so much for joining us once again.
Thanks, John. Hope it's been helpful.